ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। We're all born into the darkness of material ignorance. And we sit before you today with our eyes closed shut. But our spiritual master, His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ghi, is very kind to us because He has come to us in our darkness and forced us to open our eyes with the blazing torchlight of transcendental knowledge. Thank you, Srila Prabhupada. We'll continue with our Bhagavat Seva today. The new chapter, exciting, entitled Prahlad, the Saintly Son of Hiranyakasipu. Sloka number 1. Sri Narada Uvacha. Borohityaya Bhagavan. Borohityaya Bhagavan. Brita Kavya Kila Sarai. Brita Kavya Kila Sarai. Sandu Marco Sito Tasya. Sandu Marco Sito Tasya. Daitya Raja Grihantike. Daitya Raja Grihantike. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. The great saint Narada Muni said, the demons headed by Hiranyakasipu accepted Shukracharya as their priests for ritualistic ceremonies. Shukracharya's two sons, Sunda and Amarka, lived near Hiranyakasipu's palace. Please repeat. The great saint Narada Muni said, the demons headed by Hiranyakasipu accepted Shukracharya as their priest for ritualistic ceremonies. Shukracharya's two sons, Sanda and Amarka, lived near Hiranyakasipu's palace. Purport. The beginning of the life story of Prahlad is recounted as follows. Shukracharya became the priest of the atheists, especially Hiranyakasipu, and thus his two sons, Sanda and Amarka, resided near Hiranyakasipu's residence. Shukracharya should not have become the priest of Hiranyakasipu, because Hiranyakasipu and his followers were all atheists. A brahmana should become the priest of a person interested in the advancement of spiritual culture. The very name Shukracharya, however, indicates a person interested in obtaining benefits for his sons and descendants, regardless of how the money comes. A real brahmana should not become a priest for atheistic men. Once again, the translation. Purohityaya Bhagavan and Daitya Raja. So these two terms are incompatible as far as Srila Prabhupada is concerned. That one should not become a priest to a Daitya Raj, or a king of the demons. Hiranyakasipu was addressed here as Daitya Raj. Other places, Prahlad addressed his father as the best of the demons. It was like a backhanded compliment. You're the best, but the best of the demons. So you're the best of the worst. The king of the demons. So here we have the Daitya Raj. And he's employing Sukracharya. So herein lies the fault in Sukracharya. He has become a priest, a Brahmin priest, who is supposed to be interested in the spiritual welfare of those he advises. But here, he's not interested in the spiritual advancement. He is simply going to perform some ritualistic ceremonies and take some money from Aranyakasipu. And unfortunately, this is the case in India and everywhere around the world. And not just Hindus, but Christians and Jews and those who follow Islam also see this archetypal priest, the crooked priest, the priest who simply takes money, simply tries to accumulate money by performing some ritual. In India, this is the case. You have so many Brahmins, they are being supported by the congregation, and they are simply saying, instead of saying Lakshmi Narayan, they are saying Lakshmi Narayana Narayana Narayan, bring me Lakshmi, 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 all you can. Lakshmi Narayana Narayana Narayan, bring me Lakshmi, 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 all you can. But not only Hindus are doing that. In Christianity, we all can read the history books, how Christianity became contaminated. The priests were selling indulgences. An indulgence means a forgiveness. A person could come to the priest and he could pay some money and then the priest would forgive him of his sin, mortal sin. Because if a person committed a mortal sin, he had to get forgiveness or he was damned to hell for the rest of existence, the rest of eternity. So that's a very severe thing. So you'd get some money somehow, by hook or by crook, you'd get some money together to give to the priest so you didn't have to suffer the burning fires of hell forever and ever and ever. So this was prevalent in the Christian church throughout the history of Christianity. And as a result, in Europe, the church accumulated vast amounts of wealth. In fact, sometimes the Pope and the cardinals were the richest men in all of Europe. Richest men. Instead of being the priests, the humble Brahmin, they were as opulent as the king. And they had their own palaces. And if you go to Rome and go to the Vatican City, you'll see the most magnificent palatial building as the seat of the Catholic Church. Gold gilded ceilings and all. And throughout the ages, different popes to varying degrees were corrupted by this principle of lobha, greed. There's three gateways to hell, as we know from the Bhagavad Gita, the kama, and the krodha, and the lobha, the lust, the anger, and the greed. And here we say Sukracharya, he is overcome by greed. Because he wants to have money, he wants to have well-being for himself and his sons and his descendants, he will stop at no... Nothing is too horrendous for him to perform, even taking service from a demon. The first principle in the Brahminical culture is that they do not take any money. We understand from the descriptions in the Bhagavad, how the priests were at the performance of a big jugga. the priests were given pounds and pounds and untold amount of gold. And when they were leaving the sacrificial area, they were just throwing the gold on the side of the road. They didn't want to carry it. They didn't want to be encumbered by such a heavy weight. So they're just throwing all the gold that was given to them, throwing it on the side of the road. Okay. So in this way, the Brahmins were beyond reproach. In other words, if the Brahmins don't want any gold, then how are you going to bribe them? What are you going to give them that they don't have? So therefore, when a Brahmin is not accepting any pay, he's not accepting anything from the people that he is serving, then he's uncompromised. Can't be compromised. He'll speak the truth, even if the truth is unpalatable. But here is just the opposite. Sukracharya is taking the service from Hiranyakasipu. And sometimes people, they trick themselves into thinking, well, I'm not a greedy person. I don't want so many things for myself. But they extend themselves into their children. They extend themselves into their wife. They extend themselves into their political party or their nationality or their country. They extend themselves. And they work for that extended ego. But actually, when you peel back all the layers of subterfuge, you see that it's actually personal greed. We had another classic example of that. There's many classic examples. But of a father who was trying to fool himself into feeling that he wasn't avarice or greedy. And that is in the case of Dhritarashtra. He was greedy, but he wanted his sons to take the throne. So in other words, he was tricking himself into saying, I'm not going to be the king, I'm blind, but my sons must be king. He has greed there. So here we have the same situation. Sukracharya is the priest for Hiranyakasipu, and his sons are going to be the beneficiaries of his service. My descendants will have opulence. I may not be greedy, but my descendants, they will be living comfortably. So in this way, people try to extend their selfishness, and they go to great lengths to set up trust funds for their children. They buy insurance policies. They take out a bet that they will die, and then when they die, that there's some money going to be available for their wife and for their children. And in this way, they think they will leave a favorable legacy. Unfortunately, that doesn't happen. And greed is always there. And as Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, it's one of the three gateways to hell, to the place of Naraka. So one who wants to go to hell, they must pass through one of the three gates, or all three gates. And greed is very prominent. Greed is a motivating principle of the hedonistic society. Because the more you have, the illusion is that you'll be satisfied. If I just have a car, I'll be happy. If I just have a car, I don't want a big car, just a car. So then you take the car to work, and the wife calls on the phone, and she says, I need the car today. I need the car. And the man says, well, I've taken the car to work. I have to go to work. Well, and she says, well, I need another car. We need another car. So we have to get another car then. So in this way, greed increases more and more. And even a little bit of greed can get out of hand. A little bit of possessiveness can get out of hand. We all have heard the story about the Brahmin who went to the river to take his bath. And he only had one set of kopan. So it was a little difficult to take bath, and then he had to wait for his kopan to dry before he left. So he decided that he would get another pair of kopan. So after he came out of the Ganga, he would simply put on his fresh pair of kopan, and there he would go off his merry way. So he laid out his kopan and took his bath, and then when he was there, a rat came and stole away his kopan. So he thought, well, I got to take care of this. So he got a cat. So he went to the river and put down his dry kopan, put his cat there beside, and went to take his bath, but the cat started to meow. And she was saying, I want some milk, I need some milk. So the Brahmin said, all right, I'll get some milk. That means I have to get a cow. All right, I'll get a cow. So Brahmin, he milked the cow, put down the milk in front of the cat, you know, and the cat drank the milk, guarded his kopan, took his bath. But then he took so much time, he didn't have any time to study the shastra. So he thought, well, if I have a wife, then she'll be able to milk the cow while I go to the kopan, to the Ganga with my kopan, my dry kopan, and my cat. So he decided, all right, I'll get a wife, good wife who can milk the cow while I'm at the river. So the wife was happy to be married, but she wanted a house. So the Brahmin said, all right, every wife, she deserves a house. She's milking the cow and feed the cat to perfect the kopan. So he got a house. But then he had to pay for the house. So he didn't have any time to take his bath in the Ganga. He didn't have any time to engage in his study of the shastra. He was simply paying for the house to please the wife, to milk the cow, to feed the cat, to protect his kopan. So like this, one thing leads to another. You can say that, well, it wasn't a very greedy thing for the Brahmin to want two pairs of kopan. But you can just see where it leads to. He no longer is a Brahmin. He's just a karmi working his, you know, working to support all the things that he had started with just one extra pair of kopan. So greed is like that. The more we get, the more we want. The more we get, the more we want. There's no end to it. Just gets bigger and bigger. It's like pouring ghee on the fire. I'm going to put this fire out. Pour some ghee on it. Whoosh, gets bigger. Better put more ghee on it. Whoosh, gets bigger. More and more ghee I put on the fire, and the fire doesn't extinguish. It just gets bigger and bigger and bigger. So in this way, this is the beguiling quality of greed. It's never ending. Your greedy desires will get bigger and bigger and bigger. And it's not to say that people that have a lot of money and have a lot of material possessions, they don't want more. They're not greedy. We have a classic example in our devotee, Ambarish. Ambarish Prabhu was the grandson of Henry Ford, one of the most richest, influential men in the history of Western civilization, Henry Ford. And Alfred Ford, who later became Ambarish, he was a grandson, grandsire to that family. In other words, he had everything. You and I, we may say, well, you know, money's the root of all evil, money won't make you happy, and all that. That's kind of a theoretical thing, because we don't have all the money. So there's a question in the back of our mind, well, maybe if I did have a little money, I'd be happier. Maybe if I just had a little bit more money, I'd be happier. So theoretically, we can say that money won't make you happy. But when you see and talk to Ambarish, who had all the money, had millions and millions of dollars, and still has millions and millions of dollars, and you talk to him, and he says,
Prabhupada was right. Money does not make you happy, no matter how much you have. So he is a living example of how this principle of greed is never ending. So fortunately, Ambarish has met Srila Prabhupada, and now he is engaging all his money in building the gorgeous temple at Mayapur Chandradoya Mandir, and starting the temple of Vedic Planetarium in Sri Mayapur Dham, be the biggest temple in all of India for the glory of Lord Chaitanya and Srila Prabhupada, his greatest servant. So we can see that someone who actually has met the pure devotee, dedicated their lives to serving the pure devotee, that's where satisfaction lies. Not in having untold amount of money, not in trying to satisfy these greedy desires. It would never work. So here in this sloka, Sukracharya, who is supposed to be a priest, he's supposed to be interested in the spiritual welfare of those who are underneath his charge. He is simply engaged in the ritualistic ceremonies of being a priest for the demon Hiranyakasipu, just for the purpose of getting a little money for himself and for his descendants. So we can understand that this proposal is doomed to failure. And as this chapter unfolds, you'll see how Prahlad Maharaj, one of our great acharyas, although he was born in the family of demons, he is still one of the Mahajans, the great authorities. And we can see as this chapter moves on, all of the principles of our devotional service and the examples in our preaching and the qualities of Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu Smaranam are all explained in this chapter coming up. And we'll see how Srila Prabhupada put a lot of emphasis on preaching in this chapter. And it's very important that we study the Srila Prabhupada's books and understand the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, because sometimes we are challenged and we must be equipped to face the challenges. We have to conclude today with a little bit of Prabhupada Katha, which took place in New Vrindavan in 1970. Previously to this fateful Janmashtami gathering in New Vrindavan, Prabhupada had experienced some neglect on behalf of his disciples. In fact, because Prabhupada was living in Los Angeles at New Dwarka, and the devotees were around Srila Prabhupada every day, there were certain things that crept into their devotional service, certain flaws that familiarity breeds. The saying is, familiarity breeds contempt. That's why we should never boldly approach the deity. We should never boldly approach the spiritual master to be physically close to him. We should maintain a position of awe and reverence to our spiritual master and to the deity. Because if we become too familiar with the spiritual master, we begin to think of him as an ordinary person. And that is devastating for spiritual life. So we should never think that our spiritual master is our buddy. You know, he's someone that we hang around with. Or the deity is, we become familiar with the deity. Some of these sahajiyas, they fall into this trap, that they have become so familiar with the deity that they can carry the deity around and dance with the deity. And there were some sahajiyas in the history of ISKCON in Hawaii that thought they could take Lord Jagannath out on the surfboard. Taking Lord Jagannath out on this, because we like to surf out in the ocean, hang 5, hang 10. doing all these tricks on the surfboard, Chukka Bro. So therefore, Lord Jagannath must want to go surfing too. So we take Lord Jagannath out on the surfboard without a life vest. So this is familiarity breeds contempt. This is a Hajjiya philosophy. So because Srila Prabhupada was there in Los Angeles, every day we were seeing Srila Prabhupada on his morning walks. Every day Srila Prabhupada was giving the lectures. Every day Prabhupada was coming for darshan of the deities. Every day Prabhupada would be seen sometimes in the garden. So people were seeing Prabhupada on a daily basis. And the problem was that people started to become neglectful with their devotional service. Little telltale signs started to appear. Like on one of the publications that we produced, instead of writing Prabhupada's full name, His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, they just printed A.C. Bhaktivedanta as the author of the book. Prabhupada was very upset. Prabhupada said, "My title should always be there in the books. Founder Acharya, International Society of Krishna Consciousness, Founder Acharya, His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada." That's what should be on all the publications. But instead of that, the devotees had put A.C. Bhaktivedanta. In the temple, where you came into the temple, there was a place where you put your shoes. All the shoes were there. And they put a big picture of Prabhupada right over where the shoes were. Another offense. When we came to get the Chamrita in the morning, some Mataji mistakenly put salt in the Chamrita instead of sugar in the salt, in the Chamrita. Prabhupada took it. Oh, salt. So over and over again, all these little telltale things were coming up that were showing that the devotees had become too familiar with the spiritual master. It was an aparad. So Srila Prabhupada decided that he wanted to teach the devotees a lesson. And at the same time, accomplish another thing. Come to India to begin the preaching work of India. So Prabhupada decided, although Los Angeles was the world headquarters of ISKCON, all the devotees from all over the world were coming to Los Angeles, to New Dwarka, to become trained up in the high standard of deity worship, book distribution, temple management, cooking, cleaning. All the standards were being set at New Dwarka for the rest of the world. And then the devotees would go back to their respective temples and execute the high standard that Prabhupada was giving us in New Dwarka. So although that was there, and Prabhupada referred to New Dwarka as the world headquarters, he had it printed on his stationery, the world headquarters of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. And so many professors were coming from different universities to have interviews with Srila Prabhupada in his garden. And it was so much favorable press. But Prabhupada was displeased with the devotees, and he decided he was going to go to India with just a small group of people. And fortunately, Srila Prabhupada chose me to go in that party. Although, if you read the Lilamrita, you will see that Sasarup Maharaj has made a mistake. He forgot to put my name as one of the people who was in the party. There was only six of us. So it wasn't like a lot of people. But somehow or other, to make me humble, I have to explain to people that I actually was there. Sometimes I go to people, I went up to Tamal Krishna and I said, "Was I actually there? Did I actually go to Tokyo with Prabhupada in the party?" He said, "Yeah, you were there." I said, "Yeah, I thought I was there." So anyways, even sometimes the best intentions of recounting the history of Srila Prabhupada could be subjected to a flaw. So this is one of the flaws that is in the Lilamrita. But there's so few flaws compared to all the nectar that is there. So we can overlook that. But I can't overlook it. Because I have to prove that I was there with Srila Prabhupada. But anyways, we went to Hawaii first. And then we flew to Tokyo, Japan. So before we had flown to Hawaii, Prabhupada had initiated the second group of sannyasis. First of all, in ISKCON, there was only one sannyasi, that was Kirtananda Maharaj, who had taken sannyas in 1967 in Vrindavan. He had gone to India with Srila Prabhupada from New York. Prabhupada was going to recover his health in India because he couldn't find a suitable place in America. So he returned to India, and Kirtananda was the first sannyas. The second group of sannyasis were devotees who had become contaminated by a subtle form of aparad. Subtle form of aparad. And that is that they had taken the spiritual master not as the servant god. They had taken the spiritual master in a more familiar way. And they had been contaminated by Mayavadi philosophy. And they had been contaminated by a philosophy that was coming from India in a subtle way. This one devotee, Chutananda, who was in India, he was there going away from the war and the draft. All the young men were getting drafted into the services in those days. So he had fled to India. Some devotees fled to Canada, some went to Mexico, and some went to India. So he went to India, and he had no place to go, so Prabhupada gave him permission to stay at the Gaudiya Math in Calcutta. And while staying at the Gaudiya Math, he was subtly influenced by the members there of the Math that Prabhupada was not actually accomplishing anything on his own. He was accomplishing things on behalf of the senior swamis and maharajas at the Gaudiya Math. Because of their blessing, Swami was able to go to America and be successful there. And in this way, they were subtly undermining the accomplishments of Srila Prabhupada in America. So Achyutananda was sending books, publications from the Gaudiya Math. And there was pictures of the different Maharajas there. He was sending pictures of Bhakti Siddhanta, rare pictures that nobody had seen before, and explaining how through the mercy of Bhakti Siddhanta and the potency of the Gaudiya Math that Srila Prabhupada was able to be successful. And so there was many devotees who had been influenced by this subtle philosophy and who had become too familiar with Srila Prabhupada. And so Srila Prabhupada, in order to purify them, these were some of the big leaders of our society, Prabhupada sent them out to preach. And in order to have that status of traveling and preaching, he awarded them sannyas. He made them sannyasis, and then he said, now you are sannyasis, so now you must leave the temples. You can't stay at the temples. You have to go out and preach. So these sannyasis went out and preached, and Srila Prabhupada left America as he was teaching his devotees to appreciate their spiritual master. So when we were in Tokyo, Japan, we received an urgent telegram from Srila Prabhupada, from the devotees at New Vrindavan. And they said, all swamis have returned to New Vrindavan, and they say, you are God, referring to Prabhupada as God. So Prabhupada said, now the poison has come out. The poison has come out. Prabhupada explained that to underestimate your spiritual master is a great offense. But the only thing in the world which is worse than underestimating your spiritual master is to overestimate your spiritual master. In other words, to call your spiritual master God. Because when you say your spiritual master is God, then it indicates that, well, he became God. So if he can become God, then I also can become God. And we all can become God. In fact, we all are God right now. This is the subtlety of overestimating the spiritual master. We say the spiritual master is God, But we say the spiritual master is the servant God. And Krishna, Sisi Radha Krishna, they are the master God. Prabhupada and Krishna are God, both gods. One God is the servant God. One God is the master God. So Srila Prabhupada sent back the philosophical explanation. But all the devotees, they were all the devotees from all over the society, were there at New Vrindavan. And none of them could defeat the sannyasis that had come with this contaminated philosophy. The only one who was able to philosophically argue was Harigriva Prabhu. Harigriva was Srila Prabhupada's first editor. And he knew the philosophy, and he knew what they were speaking was wrong. And he tried to overpower them with sound philosophical understanding, but they were a force. You know, they had, one, two, three, four. There was four of them, right? Four sannyasis.
Four, right?
Subal. So, together, they were philosophically overpowering. But when Srila Prabhupada's reply came, then they drove out the sannyasis. They wouldn't let them come back to New Vrindavan. And in this way, the devotees were able to defeat these sannyasis who were deviant with a strong philosophical basis. So even today, some devotees, they are creating some upper sampradayas. They are deviating from the line of devotional service. They are saying that, well, Prabhupada is, maybe he's not God, but he's the only spiritual master forever. He's the last one. Now, there's nowhere in the scripture that that's supported. This is a deviant philosophy, that there's no more spiritual masters, that Srila Prabhupada is the last spiritual master. Prabhupada repeatedly has said to the devotees, you all must become spiritual masters. You all must become the representatives of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Not that I am the only spiritual master. You, it is your responsibility to become a spiritual master. When you have this philosophy that Prabhupada is the only spiritual master, it takes the burden off your shoulders. Oh, I'm contaminated. It's a cop-out. This philosophy is a cop-out. Oh, Prabhupada's the only spiritual master. I'm just fallen. So Srila Prabhupada, he'll take care of us all. Just like the Christians, that's their philosophy. I accept Jesus in my heart. Now I don't have to do anything else. My responsibility is finished because I've accepted Jesus in my heart as my Lord and Savior. The fanatical Christians speak like that. It takes the burden off their shoulders to seek spiritual improvement in their life. To follow in the footsteps of the spiritual master. So like this, we have to become strong in our philosophy by reading the books, by complementing that with devotional service to our spiritual master, so we can become enlightened with the philosophy. And so when we're met with these philosophical challenges, we can defeat them. So Srila Prabhupada was very happy that the devotees were driven away. And eventually, those devotees were sent overseas. And one of the sannyasi was sent to West Pakistan. And one of the sannyasis was sent to East Pakistan. And this was in 1971, when the big revolution was going on in Pakistan, when the war in Bangladesh was raging. And so one sannyasi, he hadn't read the newspapers. He wasn't up on the latest what was going on. And he arrived in Karachi as a sannyasi and sat down in the city square and started to chant Hare Krishna. And everybody gathered around. They spit on his face, wiped his tilak off, and were jeering at him, were pushing him, were calling him ill names. And he didn't know what was going on. I thought this was part of India. That this was a peaceful place. And his brother went to East Pakistan. And he landed in Dhaka. And he got off the plane dressed as a sannyasi, and he was a little inquisitive to how there was no people at the airport. There was no taxis, there was no cars, there was no way to get from the airport back to town. So we decided to walk. He walked in from the airport into Dhaka. And gradually all people started coming out of the streets and out of the villages, and a big party of people were following him into town. That was Bangladesh, and all the Vaishnavas were there, were following him. And his brother was stuck over in West Pakistan, trying to chant Hare Krishna there. So he eventually sent a telegram to Prabhupada, and he said, "Prabhupada, can I leave this place?" And in the newspapers, it had been falsely reported that two Western Hare Krishnas had been killed in West Pakistan. It was right in the paper. I saw it. Two Hare Krishnas, Western Hare Krishnas, had been killed in West Pakistan. So we had all got that news, and we couldn't confirm it. When we got the telegram, Prabhupada said, in return, "Come immediately." So when that devotee, he got the telegram from Prabhupada, he said it was the most joyful two words that he saw in his whole life. "Come immediately." So immediately he came and he landed in Bombay. And it was on a Kadasi day. And Prabhupada came and embraced him. And he smelt his head like a father would smell the little son's head. Like that on the top of his head. He was embracing him. And this was a big, big devotee. 300-pound devotee. Prabhupada was embracing him and smelling his head. And then Prabhupada turned to the cook. And he said, "Feed him puris. Feed him puris immediately. Go make puris and feed him." And then the devotee said, "Oh, Prabhupada, it's a codicil today." Prabhupada said, "I don't care. Feed him puris." He fed him puris on the Kadasi, under the order of the spiritual master. So in this way, Prabhupada showed his affection for his original devotees. And devotees, he was so happy. And then Prabhupada later on sent him to Africa, and he began the preaching in Africa. And the other devotee who was in Bangladesh, he eventually came to Calcutta and was the president of the Calcutta temple there. So, in other words, it was a long process of purification. The sannyasis were sent off to preach. They returned to New Vrindavan with some upper sampradaya, saying that Prabhupada was God, and that we had all committed great offenses to Prabhupada by not treating him like God. This was a subtle form of Mayavadi philosophy that Prabhupada said they had imbibed. And so as a result, Prabhupada sent them to East Pakistan, West Pakistan. The war broke out. I remember when we were in Akash Ganga out at Bulabai Desai Road in Beach Candy, up on the 7th floor. And the planes from Pakistan were coming in, and the guns were going off. Boom, 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 boom. And there was a big fire over the ocean, big fireworks going. And all the people came and said, "You have to go downstairs in the basement. It's not safe to be up here." And we said, "No, we want to stay up here and see the show. We want to see some plane go down." The planes never went down. The planes never got that close. But that's how exciting it was. There was actually a war going on between Pakistan and India. And it was like a big spectacle watching the... I think more people got killed by the shells that came back down and landed in Bombay than actually any damage done by the Pakistani Air Force. We had some friendly fire incidents on behalf of the India. Maybe the Indian Army was so full of itself, they were just lighting off those rockets, you know, left, right, and center. But anyways... The war was going on, and Srila Prabhupada had sent his disciples to East Pakistan and West Pakistan. So eventually they came back, and they served Srila Prabhupada. But we have to be very careful about understanding the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. by studying Srila Prabhupada's books and having this satsang of devotees. It's not good enough just to read Prabhupada's books by yourself. You know, the potency is sitting together, attending the Bhagavad class, and discussing the philosophy amongst yourselves. And this way, your philosophical appreciation is enhanced, and your siddhanta is firmly fixed. So if there's ever any challenges, then immediately you can quote incidents, quote the shastra, because everything we speak is based on three things: the guru, the sadhu, and the shastra. It has to be confirmed by those three things. The guru is speaking to us, the sadhu, the other holy men, and the shastra. Everything must be substantiated in the shastra. So guru, sadhu, and shastra. So if somebody comes along and sprouts a philosophy that Prabhupada is the only spiritual master, he's the end of the line, we have to say, what guru says that? What guru has spoken that? Show me where in Srila Prabhupada's books he has said that. What other sadhu? Tell me some Brijabasi sadhu who says that. Even some other Gaudiya Math sadhu. Where can that be confirmed? By some other Maharaj. No guru, no sadhu. And where in the Shastra is it? This upper Sampradaya. You can't substantiate it through a guru, a sadhu, or a shastra. Therefore, it's bogus. We reject it, and we reject you. Simple as that. So Srila Prabhupada gave us the standard, and so we're trying to follow in those footsteps. So I'll read the sloka one more time. If there's any question, I'll try to defer to Maharaj. Is he still there? Translation.
The great saint Narada Muni said, the demons, headed by Hiranyakasipu, accepted Sukracharya as their priest for ritualistic ceremonies. Sukracharya's two sons, Sanda and Amarka, lived near Hiranyakasipu's palace.
So, unfortunately, I have a plane to catch this morning, so we can't extend the class in the Prabhupada Katha session forever. So I have a good excuse to come back to a eager audience to hear more and more about Srila Prabhupada and his Katha. So can we have one question? Is there any question? If there's not, then I can be about my travels. Could have 100 hands up back there, I couldn't see. But it doesn't seem like there's any hands. So once again, I thank you all very much for inviting me to this wonderful place, the home of Shishi Radha Gopinath, Shishi Gornitai, Srila Prabhupada, and His grace, divine grace. Radhanath Maharaj.
Radhanath Maharaj ki. Srila Prabhupada ki. Gau Premanande Haribo. Gaur Bhaktavinda ki. Jai.